Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 12:30. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our guests today are Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and Paul Sloan, the City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Paso Robles Space Sport Initiative, and really just to talk about what a great gem the Paso Robles Airport really is for this community. And then we're going to do an update on critical aspects of the strategic work plan implementation that I know Chris has been working with, and balancing economic development with North County rural sensibilities. Chris and Paul, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thanks, Barry. Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you back, and good to have you here for the first time, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you folks, you can call in or text with questions, and I can't imagine that many of you are not going to have questions for some of our guests today. You can call in or text at 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Paul, you're a newcomer, so we'll let you get up to bat first. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right, thanks. My name is Paul Sloan. Paso Robles is my hometown. Go Bearcats. My family has a small farm on the west side where I grew up, and I went to all the west side schools, Georgia Brown, Ray Bauer,
wow.
Paso High School when it was on 24th Street. And then after high school, I was off to college and life and a few other things. As an undergrad, I went to UC Davis. I studied biology. And I worked for the University of California for 4 years as a research diver based out of the Bodega Marine Lab up in Bodega Bay, north of San Francisco. And after that, I did 9 seasons as a scuba diving instructor in various exotic places, working for an international resort company called Club Med, which you may have heard of. After that, I came back to the States and I went to grad school, got a master's degree at the George Washington University School of Business in Washington, D.C., and I was working for Continental Airlines down in Los Angeles as their director of internet marketing for the Pacific and Central America and the Caribbean.
So that must have been when internet marketing was really in its infancy.
This was in the 90s. This was building up to the dot-com bubble. Yeah,
that was my airline of choice back then. I used to go between Denver and L.A.
Yep.
On the pub flight. On the DC-10 pub flights, those were the best.
Yeah. So I worked for them. I was based in L.A. Down in El Segundo is where a lot of, it's right next to LAX.
Right.
There's a lot of airline offices down there. And so there at the time, this is before they merged United, but there was a big business complex called Continental Plaza. And it's where I was working. And as it happens, the National Tourism Office of Tahiti opened their North American office on the ground floor of our building, where my office was, and they heard that I'd lived in Tahiti for a couple of years when I worked for Club Med. So they said,
tough duty.
You got to do what you got to do. But they said, you must come work for us. And it was literally the same building. This is a different floor. I said, that sounds like fun. So I became the director of marketing and promotions for North America for Tahiti for 7 years. Mm. And we had a team of 9 in that office. And then our son was born. My wife's from Tahiti. I met her when I was working down there. She's from the island where the resorts was located. So our son was born in L.A., and my wife said, I don't want him to grow up in L.A. She goes, I'd like him to grow up in the islands like I did, and there literally is no counter-argument to that. So we sold our house, and we moved to Tahiti, bought a piece of land, and built a little house on the beach with a lagoon in the front yard, and that's where our son grew up. And at that time, so I was working in the TD Black Pearl industry. So I was doing marketing, business development for a couple of high-end jewelry designers. And then it was great. I learned all about import-export of gold and diamonds and high-value goods. I really enjoyed it because I like learning new things. And then a colleague of mine, who's a phenomenal graphic designer, her name is Amandine Lenoir. Together we launched our own marketing agency. And we're working with a wide range of businesses of all sizes, big companies and lots of mom and pops, which I really like working with. And so Amandine and I worked together for 7 years. And then in 2012, my father died. And so we came back to Paso to help my mom. She was, it was a tough time. And so we came back to help her out. And it was an upside. My son got to go to Bauer Spec for third and fourth grade. And that's when he became fluent in English. His first language is French. And he got to be in Cub Scouts and be an American kid. So it was really, really good. The Tahitian government came back around. And they really wanted me to come back and be run their global operations, doing their marketing worldwide. And my mom was in a better place, and we'd sort of arranged everything. So in 2014, we moved back down to Tahiti, and I became the CEO for Tahiti's National Tourism Office with a team of 120. I ran the head office in Tahiti, and we had 14 international offices around the world. We had offices in London, in Paris, Milan, Madrid, Frankfurt, Tokyo, Shanghai, Seoul, Sydney, Auckland, Montreal, Toronto, LA, and Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Wow.
And then the Brazil office ran marketing in Argentina and Chile, and Germany ran the programs in Austria and Switzerland. So altogether, we were doing marketing and action promotions in 18 countries around the world.
So you never lacked for frequent flyer miles.
It was a horrendous amount of travel. It was a horrendous amount of travel. I still have miles that I haven't burned off.
I'll take them.
When you tell someone you had to go to Paris half a dozen times a year, you get no sympathy, but it's not as great as it sounds. But so we got to do it. It was an amazing experience, marketing a destination, doing workforce development and doing business attraction, and then working with all the local companies and businesses, from big brands like Four Seasons, St. Regis, all the way down to literally hundreds of mom and pops, which again I really love working with. And I a lot of travel. When I'd transit California, I'd go see my mom. And as the years passed, it was obviously getting tougher for her to be by herself. So it reached the point where she couldn't really live alone anymore, but she wanted to stay in the home that she'd known for so many years, where she raised her family. So I went to see the Minister of Tourism, and I said, "We've got this just maxed out. You got your firing on all cylinders. We took a V8, made a V12, and it's just screaming." And I says, "I think it's time for me to go home." And so we did that, and so we came back, and in 2020 moved back to Paso, and my son got to graduate from Paso High School, which makes me happy. Bearcat legacy, and I'm back living on the farm where I grew up, and I have the incredible honor to work for my hometown.
That's great. So you went from really serial entrepreneur to being a government employee.
Yeah.
What was that transition like?
Well, when I first came back here in Paso, the city had outsourced economic development to the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm.
And so I came in on the end of a 3-year contract, and there was no one in the position. The Chamber hired me as soon as I got back. So I was at the Chamber for 6 months. And then when the contract expired, the city decided they wanted to bring it in-house. So I went through the application process, like everyone, and they hired me, and so I became a government employee back in July of 2020.
It's not a pejorative or anything, but, you know.
It depends on who you talk to.
All right. And Mr. Bosch, you are a regular here, and everybody knows you. Is there something you could tell us about you that we don't know?
I'm not even going to try to.
You just told me something, Paul. But I don't know if I could say it. You just told us something. You told me something.
Well, I came to Paso Robles in 1986. I had a 1-year contract to fix a broken business, which I had been doing down in the L.A. area. I went to Cal Poly Pomona and got connected with a guy that fixed bankrupt businesses, basically flipped them. And so we did that and learned how to run businesses, manage people. The opportunity to Paso Robles was for a 1-year contract. Decided, love Paso Robles. It was 12,000 people back then. Downtown was boarded up.
What year was this again? I'm sorry.
86.
Okay.
And Norma was just starting to get going with Main Street. Fell in love with Paso. My family had a ranch in Coarse Gold, California. So very similar. But Paso was a little more progressive than Coarse Gold at that time. We raised 5 children here, 5 Bearcats. They all went off to great universities. I bought the business that I was sent here to fix, grew it from about 6 employees in one location to 4 locations, over 50 employees on the Central Coast. We sold that in about 2002. The earthquake hit 2003. I got involved with Mission San Miguel trying to keep it from becoming a secular museum. We kept it a Catholic mission. That was very rewarding. And then I was asked to run for school board in 2012. I was told I couldn't win. I won by 13
votes.
That's
all they needed to tell you, though, right?
I was doing it to help somebody out. and then 10 years later, there was an opening when Maria Elena retired from the city council, and I was appointed for about 2 months to fill her spot, got elected, and have been there for not quite 4 years now.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have both of you here. It's really great to have this kind of historical perspective on this town, you know, coming on the show. So, Paul, you know, one of the things that we were talking about before we went on air was that, you know, in my research, I never realized what a gem the Paso Robles Airport really is. And it's got quite a history. Why don't you share that with our audience that may not know about some of the highlights of it?
Sure. It is a gem, and it's, people have said that for a very long time. For those who may or may not know the history of it, it's a former military air base. It was built in World War II. The city acquired it in 1973 for $1. Things were cheaper back in the 70s. Just for context, the San Luis Obispo Airport is 340 acres, and the Paso Robles Airport is 1,300 acres. We're a full 4 times bigger. Hmm. And out in SLO, they've got United and American and Alaska flying in and out of there. And we're 4 times bigger. We're just coming up on the finishing touches of an airport master plan update, which is something that hadn't been done in 20 years. So that'll be wrapping up in the next couple of months. And one of the things that is, it's been a really great process to have the data really, you know, ink on paper, is that today, after 50 years as a general aviation airport, we're using 13.8% of our airfield capacity. Hmm. And the projections going forward, if we were to continue the same trend line, in 20 years from now, we'd be using just under 22%. So there'd still be 80% of the airfield 20 years from now that's not being used.
So totally underutilized.
Yeah, just lots of opportunities. So the idea is to build a future that keeps everything we have and allows it to grow, but then see how we can enhance our existing infrastructure to achieve the city leadership goals and things like that. And that's literally, it's everything we're doing. When you step back, it's really funny. We're just connecting dots that have always been there. Whether it's with the, you know, the airport and city council goals and Cal Poly and Cuesta and high school, all those things. So the airport is a huge opportunity for us. When people come here and they look at it, they're amazed at the abundance of big flat dirt. You just don't find that. And that's gold in its own way.
So, you know, I want you to unpack the master plan process a little bit. But one of the things that I picked up in reading about it was that there is no control tower at Paso Robles Airport, correct?
Yes.
So how do the planes figure it out when they're coming in and out for landing and takeoff?
They talk on the radio and say, this is me, I'm coming in, and it's my turn to go.
It's fairly typical of a general aviation airport, and I think that's some of the reason why there's some skepticism, you know, from the piston jockeys about whether or not a spaceport is viable. It's an evolution, and maybe, Paul, you can talk about the airport master plan as opposed to the application for the spaceport.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, just last week we were having the fourth and final workshop on the airport master plan, and the discussion was on the question of a tower. Do we plan for it? Because the master plan is what's the airport look like for the next 20 years, basically. Mm-hmm. And the consultants doing it says until we reach airport operations, takeoff and landings of at least 100,000. Below that, the FAA doesn't consider it necessary for a tower. So there's, in our foreseeable future, we won't have a tower unless we do something with the military that wants to set up an operation. And that's, to Councilmember Bausch's point, it's why the pilots love it here. We have 320 days a year of beautiful skies, and you can do whatever you want, be safe and all that things, but you can take off and land as much as you want. And so a third of the traffic right now, when you count the number of takeoffs and landings, is literally takeoff and landings, touch and goes. It's flight schools. So a third of our traffic is not even people coming or going. It's just people practicing. And so that's, you know, it's just a great place where you can have those types of activities.
When they had commercial flights in and out of here back when, did they have a control tower?
No, we've never had a control
really?
Tower. Really? I'm not sure the GPS was a real thing back then either, like it is today.
Really?
There were some, from what the old-timers tell me, there were some light towers off of Adelaide Road and beacons, and they would triangulate off of those.
Well, I can tell you, I connected from Chicago up to San Luis Obispo a couple of weeks ago, coming into LAX, and the landing at LAX was amazingly scary because the guy was just about ready to touch down, and I guess he got called off. And I ended up running into the pilots, deadheading it into San Luis Obispo. And I didn't realize they were the pilots until I asked them, this just happened. What the heck happened? And they were gigging each other about they were coming in too hot. But, yeah, then again, with all these near, you know, the accident they had at LaGuardia and some other close calls recently, it's kind of scary to fly. In and out of places.
And the biggest thing with the FAA is whatever type of license you have is it's safety. That's their biggest thing. Whether it's a general aviation airport or what they call a Part 139, which has commercial flights, things like that, or eventually if we were to get a spaceport license, number one is just safety about it. So.
All right. Well, we've got about another minute left here or two. So talk about the what the master plan process looks like and then where it goes from there.
With the airport?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a great. You can all the documents are online if people want to look at them at prb.airportstudy.net. And basically, they do an inventory of what we have, and then they do sort of projections, and then they do what's called an airport layout plan, where they map out what the airport could look like, you know, allowing for additional hangars and things like that for all the different types of operations, where we can have, in this case, potential eventual spaceport operations, how everything can live in a complementary fashion on the same landscape.
Yeah, well, so this spaceport thing has been in process for about 5 or 6 years now, right?
It was 5 years in February.
Why don't you give us the high-level crib notes in the next 15 seconds, and then we'll take it on the other side of the break.
Go, Paul, go.
Sure. City Council said we need to diversify the economy. We need to attract higher-paying household jobs. We need tech. Right then, Vandenberg became a Space Force base. Everyone's talking space. And Cal Poly says, hey, we do space. Let's get together.
Yeah. And that's how it all started.
That's how it all started.
All right. And we're getting to the point here where, I guess I got another minute. So where are we at? I mean, what is planned for the spaceport?
So spaceport is a license, and there's different kinds of licenses you get there. Today there are 14 commercial spaceports in the U.S., and to be a commercial spaceport, which is not Vandenberg. Vandenberg is military, and they're only you get a license from the FAA, and you can be an airport and a spaceport, which is why you see it in the names like Mojave Air and Spaceport, Colorado Air and Spaceport, so you can absolutely have both. And it's something you apply for, and there's different types of like there's only one commercial spaceport on the West Coast. It's out in Mojave, so there's opportunities that we have between Silicon Valley.
A real garden spot.
Mojave, yeah, absolutely. It's a great place there. But though we have up in Silicon Valley is a high concentration of space technology, and I think that's the bumper music.
Yeah, it is the bumper music. All right, when we come back, I want you to unpack what's planned for the spaceport, and we're going to have rockets going up in the air. I know it's going to be horizontal lift.
That's 4th of July.
That's 4th of July. All right, folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so stand by. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and Paul Sloan, City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Paul, let's unpack. What is the spaceport proposed going to look like?
Sure. Well, a spaceport is just a license for existing infrastructure.
Okay.
So we're literally not building anything at all. And despite people make things up, we're not building anything, we're not extending the runway, we're not, so it's a piece of paper. It's a really cool piece of paper, but that's basically what it is. And we're doing dual track. One is getting the license, and the other is what we're calling our technology corridor.
Okay.
And we've already started working on that with our testing stands. So if you go on Google Maps and look, you can see in very remote parts of the airport, there's these cement pads where they used to park bombers in World War II. These are parts of the airport that have not been used in a very long time. Mm. And they're all spread out so bombers couldn't be attacked, you know, whatever.
Right.
And we set up our first test stand where companies, aerospace engineering firms, can test micropropulsion systems that are used on satellites. And our first tenant out there was a company that literally created the propulsion system for the NASA Capstone project that's been orbiting the moon since November of 23. And they're out there testing now as part of the Artemis project. So we today have three engineering firms plus Cal Poly students using it. The testing site is booked out 3 months in advance. We're building a second one. And it just means using another one of those World War II concrete pads and setting up some stuff for them. But basically, our spaceport plans, different from all the other ones in the U.S., is our focus on education and workforce development. So no one else is doing that. And so with our academic partners, Cal Poly, Cuesta, and local school districts, it's a chance to train locally for jobs and try and give people the chance, and that will attract the businesses, which are already happening, for people to be able to stay here. What people don't realize is that in the space sector, the technician, there's a lot of jobs that don't require a four-year degree. Technician-level workers are super needed. Mm-hmm. Three that most in-demand trades are welding, machinists, and maintenance technicians.
Okay. We got a caller. What's your question for Paul and Chris?
Okay, Paul. How much longer do you think before we can get an approval for the spaceport?
Sure.
Thanks for the question.
So in March, we did a joint session of council, airport commission, and planning commission, and that was a bookend to a joint session we did in 2022 when we kind of kicked off the whole thing. We'd done a feasibility study back then, which showed we could do it, mm-hmm. and this was bringing all of the work that we've done over the last few years together with the three bodies, and the council unanimously authorized us to go forward. So there's a number of steps to get the license. We've completed most of them, but there are a few left that require very specialized consulting agencies. And the last few steps are very expensive. That's just how it is. We use students, interns, and things to keep costs down to this point, but we're going to have to pay the money for these things.
So this is a cost to the city.
It's a cost to the city. And so we're going out to RFP is what council authorized. We'll be probably sending it out within the next couple of weeks. And then when the offers come back in, proposals will go to council. And at that point, it's literally a funding question. We've done the studies. We know we can get from here to there. The FAA says it's something we can do. And we know the economic returns and impacts and all the other things. So it'll be really is, do we want to pay for it? And that's sort of the next step. And if we get the green light from council, then it's 12 to 18 months from that point until we actually have the license.
So this is the work that RSNH is doing? They're kind of like airport builders, I guess.
Yeah, they do a lot of infrastructure things. But they also work a lot of spaceports around the world. We've used them for two things. One, they went back and looked at all the things we've been working on over the last 5 years, because we used a lot of different consultants and students and things to take all of our homework and put it in one thing to see how are we against the requirements for license. And that's what was presented to council, just so we know where we are and how to get to the finish line. And the other thing that they did was when you're building test sites, you have to do something called an explosive site plan, which is basically putting a ring of safety around where you're doing things like that. And we worked with RSNH to update the airport's explosive site plan. That shows you where you store fuels and things like that. And so at this moment, we're not working with them, but they will likely respond to there's about four or five companies that are interested, and they'll likely respond, because that's one of the things they do is do licensing.
So are there any other risk factors that, you know, need to be considered, potential explosion, environmental, anything like that?
So an important part about the whole thing is that 90% of the economic activity on a spaceport has nothing to do with launches. Mm-hmm. It's research and development, it's testing, it's advanced manufacturing, it's payload processing, which is basically prepping things to be taken to Vandenberg for launch, which people have told us we should do here, because right now they're doing a lot of that in L.A. and trucking it up to Vandenberg, and we're mm-hmm. a lot closer. And so we see that as, on the academic side, working with our academic institutions, training people, and then as well as being a place for testing and R&D. And so that's nothing flies around with that. So, and also getting a spaceport license means it's a place we can host those types of activities, again, horizontal launch. But it doesn't authorize any launches. So if any company that's a launch company wants to come here, they have to apply for their own launch license from the FAA and go through all their environmental and safety things. So we are just getting a license says this is a place where those types of activities can happen. But anyone who wants to do it has to go through their own license.
Oh, and that's something they do with the FAA.
They do it themselves, and that's all there.
And in the short run, I mean, the people that are coming up here are kind of, I'll use the word part-time or type employees that, come and stay at the hotels, yep. Eat at restaurants. But it's at some point, there's probably going to be some sort of permanent workforce here, right?
We already have the first company bought a building 2 months ago. And in about 30 to 60 days, we'll be announcing another one that's going to be hiring very good jobs here in Paso.
We want to talk about that. The other side of the break, folks, we'll be back with Paul Sloan and Chris Bosch talking about the airport and other pressing issues in Paso Robles. So stand by.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products, protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have two great guys here in studio with me today, Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager, Paul Sloan, who he doesn't know this yet, but he's going to be a regular on the show from now on because he is so entertaining and interesting. All right.
The snacks in the green room are amazing.
Yeah. I'll talk to Kevin about the snacks in the green room. Yeah, he probably has to leave a few bottles of something in there with them too. Anyway, we're gonna wrap up our deep dive of the spaceport. I mean, to me, this is a fascinating project and really cool, especially after we just saw the moon mission and all that kind of stuff. I have a young friend who's a millennial and he still thinks that the 1969 moon landing was a hoax, and I have to tell him no, but that's okay. And then we're going to talk about the strategic work plan implementation, and most importantly, and I'd sure like comments from the audience if you got some time to call in, how we balance economic development with North County rural sensibilities. I think this is really important. It comes up all the time on something is making noise here on Morning Exchange. So you can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. I think one of the most exciting parts of the spaceport initiative is all the educational stuff,
right,
that's going to become available to young people who are graduating high school even, but college as well. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, and that was one of the big original points of it, is how do we create pathways to jobs so that folks can stay here on the Central Coast. And we've been, Councilmember Bausch is very familiar with the CTE program at the high school. We've been working with Superintendent Loftus as well on modernizing some aspects of the career technical programs. And so, for example, taking our excellent welding program and extending that to space micro-welding, which is what it needed for building satellites and things like that. This is in very high demand. So taking the core skills and then adapting them, working with Cuesta for one-year certification programs that are very targeted, industry-specific, what companies actually need and will hire you for. And then once we have the talent pipeline, we have a great place people want to live. That's what companies are looking for, is someplace that welcomes business and has people willing to work. From day one, the most common comment we've had from locals is, this is amazing. Our kids can have jobs. Our grandkids don't have to leave. And second to that is, our kids can come home. Because if your kid goes off to college, there's a good chance they're not coming back because the jobs they train for aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And if your kid stays here, the job base may not pay them enough to stay here.
Well, they don't get trained for jobs in college.
So, but engineering and technical
engineering,
jobs.
Engineering, yes, yeah. but not the liberal arts.
Yeah. And let's be honest, not every job requires a four-year university degree. There's a lot of education that we can mm-hmm. do right here between the high school and Cuesta College, and allows people to never have to leave home.
Absolutely.
Well, this kind of, again, I talk about it with Kenny all the time, the proficiency, the low proficiency in the basic stuff. How are our high school kids and junior college kids, how are we going to bring them up to speed so they can do these more technical jobs?
I don't know that the proficiency that's being measured is necessarily applicable to these jobs that are here. Certainly the math is required, but how do you read a blueprint? Mm-hmm. How do you read a schematic? How do you build something with your hands? How do you micro weld something?
So
trust me, the state of California is not testing those proficiencies.
So who's going to train them to do this stuff?
Teachers.
Okay, so we'll have to bring in people that, you know, the people that can train the kids to do this stuff.
Yeah, like once upon a time we had shop classes and things like that.
Yeah.
And this is just another type of shop class that's specialized for specific industries. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, you probably saw Cal Poly got $1 million grant to set up a training facility. Mm-hmm. They'll be buying it specifically to buy equipment such as micro welders, you know, lasers for micro welding, things like that, so that the high school and Cuesta can extend programs to use the tools that we'll be setting up out mm-hmm. at the airport.
I think we see, without going too far afield, we have dual enrollment set up now through our CTE programs with Cuesta College. And so you take a high school teacher, you get them up to speed to teach a college level course at the high school. I see more of that coming about. But Paul's absolutely right. We have a state-of-the-art welding shop at the high school now, probably better than something that Cuesta offers. But it's not micro-welding. So that's going to have to be either a new shop built or repurposed, something along those lines.
Let me ask you one last question on the spaceport, and then we're going to move on. Is there any expected major or need for new infrastructure to have the spaceport developed? I mean, you know, around the airport could have impacts on the community?
For the license, no. We're literally licensing existing infrastructure, which is basically the runway. If a business wants to come and build a building, then they will obviously have to go through all the things you do with planning, whether it's on airport property or all around the airport. There's lots and lots of private land that things can be built on. So that's the great part, is that we're connecting dots with our school system, with our local communities all up and down the coast, and our school districts, that this is literally a regional project. And if I can say one last thing, if anybody wants, since we're talking about horizontal launch, if folks listening in would like to see what that looks like, if they go on, there's a company that's a leader in the market. It's called Dawn Aerospace, D-A-W-N Aerospace, and they've been here a couple of times. They spoke at a conference here in Paso last year. They're big fans of Paso and Cal Poly. And last summer, they flew a Cal Poly student project on their space plane. And they created a really cool little video. And if you go to YouTube and you can just type in Google, you know, use search term, Dawn Aerospace Cal Poly. And the little video will come up. It's about a minute 40. And it's the head of the airline talking about working with Cal Poly. You'll see a space plane and how it flies, a Cal Poly student project. And you can literally see what we're talking about. That someday could happen in Paso.
These horizontal lift vehicles are mostly drones, basically.
They are drones. They're unmanned. There's plans for them to be some manned, but these are basically remotely piloted. And they're half the size of a Cessna 152.
Very small.
Very small.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Before we get into the, I'm going to let the listeners know you have a really great economic development dashboard on the path. So if you Google Paso Robles economic development dashboard, folks, you'll see what we're going to be talking about here in a minute. But before we go through that, because it's about eight screens, and I want to kind of just touch on, you know, we have all kinds of conversation on KPRL about, you know, managing the development so that people who lived here because they wanted a quiet, peaceful existence don't have neighbors that are making noise, whether it's agricultural neighbors making noise or airports that are making noise. So, I mean, from a planning perspective, let's start with Chris here now. I'll give you a break for a second, Paul. You know, I mean, what do you look for when you look at a project is brought to the city council? What do you look for to know that the right kind of balance is being struck from a policy perspective on you know, making sure that the people who have lived here for a number of years are not going to be inconvenienced by the development project?
I think for me, I'm not, the job of any city council, certainly our own, is to create, maintain, and grow economic value. That's our job one, and that comes in many different forms. Education our tourism, whether it's the airport, the spaceport, somebody who wants to have a manufacturing facility here. There are zoning laws and codes that have to be followed. We have different classifications of business licenses. I think it's up to an entrepreneur or a business owner, an existing company wants to expand here to explore those, see where they fit. If they're going to build a building, we'll say, they have to follow the building codes. That goes through our planning commission. The planning commission is really good. There's some great folks there that can examine and help an applicant walk through that. City council isn't really necessarily asked to weigh in on, do you approve this business moving here? I think it's our job to attract people that we might bump into at conferences or that we meet, you know, in a restaurant while they're visiting here, and encourage them to come here. We have so many CEO types of people that visit our wineries, for example, simply picking up a wine club shipment and talking to them about, hey, did you think about downtown? Did you think about out at the airport? There's land here. Then we come back, unfortunately, and we talk about housing. Eventually, we come back down to housing. So we really need to work on our housing.
Well, that's going to be the next topic here, you know, because that's always, it comes up every time I talk to you or John Pichon or Heather.
Sure.
You know, I mean, is this term affordable housing? And on the dashboard, I can look and see that, so what do we have, 30,000 people living in Paso Robles now, approximately?
Approximately.
I mean, it looks to me like there are very few homes, new homes being built. The price is high. Average cost, what did you say, it's like $750,000 now?
And going. Depending and going on which study you're looking at, I've seen the median price as high mm-hmm. as $950,000.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, as we were talking during the break, you know, you're saying it has to be high-density housing for the band, which a lot of us don't want to see here.
I think the folks that are proposing solutions for our affordability, is what I said, are proposing high-density housing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that fits Paso Robles? I don't think the appetite for high-density housing being, you know, clustered together, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 stories tall, that would reduce the cost dramatically. But is that something that we want to see impact our skylines, our traffic, our infrastructure? Jury's still out on that.
What's driving up the cost mostly? Is it the permitting process? Is it just the cost of land, or is it just the overall being in California?
I think all of the above. I would start with land cost. Land's very expensive in California. Buying that land, getting through CEQA if that's necessary, getting through plan check. That's time-consuming. The cost of mandates that the state of California puts on, whether it's solar or other kinds of infrastructure that the state has bestowed upon us, supposedly in our own best interest. I think a lot of that is going to have to be adjusted. The city just went through a review on our fees. We are not allowed to make a profit on fees that we charge. The fees that we include not only what it costs to go through plan check, but also all of the inspections that have to come during the construction process. Our fees are not, they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what they were from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they're ungodly expensive, but they're in line with what it actually costs. And we can show that what our costs are and justify those. It's just expensive.
Well, I know that I couldn't afford to build my house today that I built 30 years ago. You know, and I'm in an unincorporated San Luis Obispo County, and I just know how even the county fees have gone through the roof. I've heard the city fees are really unbelievable, you know, connecting to the sewer or water or whatever it is.
Unless you have an ADU, and then it's really, really inexpensive.
Why is that?
Well, we're not allowed to charge extra because of the new laws coming out of California.
Okay.
We can't. There's a lot of things that the state has taken out of our hands.
Okay. And then in the meantime, and you know, we were talking again during the break, the housing developments that they've doing out on Lane, some of those have kind of stalled in their ability. Well,
only one that I'm aware of.
Oh yeah, what's going on with that?
Officially, what I know about it is that the developer lost their construction financing, mm-hmm. and they are working to secure new financing, mm-hmm. and then it'll pick back up.
All right. All right. How do you see it from your perspective, Paul? I mean, you know, because you're looking at it slightly differently, I think, than Chris might be.
Are you talking about housing in general?
Yeah, housing and affordability and all that stuff.
Sure. Well, affordability is an interesting term because that just means if you can afford it, mm-hmm. right? And if you look at the actual affordability rates that the county puts out, mm-hmm. they have workforce housing and they have medium income and low income and acutely low income. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Bausch and I participate in the HCOC, which is the Housing Constraints and Opportunities Committee. And one of the things we talk about is we literally have two housing market objectives. So we have a lot of our jobs are service level jobs. And so when we look at both the wine industry and the tourism industry, they say we need apartments for our staff. Mm-hmm. They're renters. And then we're building a lot of single family homes. And so what we need are jobs that pay enough for local people to buy the homes. So we need essentially apartments for the workers we have now, and we need jobs for the houses we're building, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you know anybody who's trying to buy a house here locally, there's a lot of competition with folks moving here from outside the area. They sell a house in L.A. or the Bay Area, and for them, we are a good deal. Mm-hmm. And it's not that our prices are high, it's the gap between the income levels, what our jobs pay, and the cost. And so there was just an article last week or the week before where we were one of the top four most challenging counties or something like that.
I was looking at, you know, your rental market here. I'm looking at your dashboard. The rental market looks pretty constricted as well.
Everything is constricted. Beacon Economics at their economic forecast from a couple of years ago predicted that we'd be over 15,000 units short. And interesting to note, it didn't matter what type of units were built, market rate, for mm-hmm. sale homes or rental homes, all of those would help move the needle to an affordable if we built that many units. Mm-hmm. So it's the supply and demand. There's nothing really surprising there. If you built more houses, prices would come down. But we're seeing people stacked up in homes right now in apartments, three or four deep, families.
Yeah.
I never thought I would see that in Paso Robles.
It's really something. I'm looking at the household income numbers here, and it looks like I wasn't surprised that our household income here is a little lower than the county, but I was surprised to see that we're quite a bit lower than the state. And you know, you'd think that this was would be a pretty affluent area to be able to afford to live here. I mean, what's the story there?
Retirement, I think, is a big driver of that number.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's the problem. I was looking at that number. There was a slide here, two age distribution.
Right.
There's too many old people like Chris and I here.
Hey, careful.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm looking at, just looking at that, I think it's the last one. You should have put that first. But basically,
Paul's trying to bury that.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the age distribution, I mean, the vast majority of people in the county, in this area, are over age 50.
We are constantly
highly experienced. I think
highly experienced. That's it. We're constantly being rated as one of the top places to retire for all the great reasons that people like living here. That's just a fact. And then so people that have the means and the time of their life, the period of their life when they're looking for that, are attracted to us.
All right. Well, you know, Paul, you're really getting good at this because you hit the mark for the break right there. It was good. Anyway, folks, we'll be back. We're going to talk about infrastructure next. And Chris has some good news on that front, I think. So we'll be talking about that and other pressing issues in the city on the other side of the break. So stand by. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Paul Sloan, Economic Development Director for Paso Robles, and of course, City Councilman Chris Bausch. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. You know, so the last thing I want to ask you guys, and then we'll move into the infrastructure stuff that we want to, I know everybody's interested in, and the progress that you're making on managing the city. And we talked a couple weeks ago, and you said there, in your mind, Chris, that there are some things that you're really seeing that are positive. But I guess the overlying, aside from the fact that we're all too old in the county, right? Okay, we've identified the number one problem. There's too many people my age. The economy's pretty flat here. Tourism is flat to down. The wine industry is holding on. So this is one of the reasons why the spaceport is so darn important. You know, private, economic development is a good thing. So, I mean, you've got a tax initiative coming up from Slow Cog. So I'd be interested in both of your takes on that, if you want to take a minute on that. And then also, I mean, I believe the school, Paso Robles Schools, is looking to float a bond, aren't they? So people are, the taxes are going up, basically, or they're proposed.
They're proposed. They have to, right. Both of those are looking to be on the November 3rd ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get on, it'll be up to the people to decide if they want to pay more tax or not.
What are you seeing here on the Slow Cog front?
So Slow Cog is another half-cent sales tax addition that would have to get a cap to increase the amount that we could charge. We're already at that maximum, so... I think Senator John Laird would have to, he may have already introduced that legislation to increase the amount of tax. Hmm. If Slow Cog has tried and failed in the past to increase our sales tax, there are those, the opponents say that we already pay too much. The county should be using their money in a better fashion. Spend it less on another project, more on roads. Slow Cog is saying we need this money in order to compete with other cities who are applying for shovel-ready projects and getting grants from state and federal that Norris County, San Luis Obispo County has been not privy to. And we're talking, in some cases, billions of dollars mm-hmm. of grants in aggregate.
Hmm.
The school bond is another construction bond for, as I understand it, I'm not an expert on this by any chance, stretch, but this time for work at the high school. Measure M is still being paid off. That was passed in 2016, and that was for elementary school and the one project, the pool at the high school. If you talk to business manager Brad Pulowski, they need this bond in order to make new classrooms and new labs, like the welding lab we just talked about, in order to build that. So there are some opportunities that could be taken advantage of with more money.
And what about the J-20 tax? That's something else that's coming
up here.
That's
a great... I mean, I don't like taxes. I don't like sales taxes. J-20 was used for roads and our fire and safety.
Mm-hmm.
I think the results speak for themselves. We are fully staffed at 61 officers right now and support personnel for the police department. Six more at the academy. When those six are graduated, we will be fully staffed for the first time, I think, ever, or at least in a very long time. Same with the fire department. There are about four, I'm going from memory here, but we've been able to start a new fire station on Union, a new training station, which eventually will lower all of our, should lower our insurance rates within the city limits. We have a new paramedic vehicle, I call it. Instead of rolling out a large fire truck, you can roll out a four crew, and it's just a lot more efficient. Most of our calls from the fire department, going back to the elderly, are a response to the elderly.
Hmm.
I could see if the funds allowed it, purchasing another one of those vehicles just to save a lot of money. The roads, I think the biggest proof in the pudding of why a sales tax measure, we just passed a sales tax measure and we eliminated the sunset clause. I voted against it because of the sunset clause. I don't think we should borrow money against a sales tax measure. We know what that revenue stream is going to be. Why should we borrow money against that and pay half of it back in debt service or interest?
Right.
To Ryan Cornell's credit, figured out a way to save money for a couple of years, working with Edith Esperanza and David LaCar and staff to design work for 2 years, save money, and now we can spend almost $15 million this year on road repair and road maintenance. That's an amazing way to use all of the money that's generated for the purpose intended instead of spending it on debt service.
Well, yeah, especially at a high interest rate environment like we're living in right now.
We have some of the best staff that are very creative.
And then there's me.
Yeah. You know, you have to include Paul in that too. I think with our new city manager, Chris Hewitt and his assistant, David Malowitz, our staff is probably the most excited that I've seen in a very long time. They're very positive. I think to Mr. Hewitt's credit, he pushes responsibility down as far as it'll go and then says, do it. Here's the objective. Make it happen. And people are very, very resourceful in making good things happen. We look at some of the parks. The Parks and Recs are doing our Veterans Park and over next to Sherwood using recycled, repurposed material, not costing us money to do something, but making the city a better place. Our new arts
and culture,
arts and culture committee. We'll be staffing that, taking interviews for applicants who want to serve on that. Great idea that came out of Parks and Recreation. We will continue to grow and be a positive force in North County with the staff that we have under Chris Hewitt's leadership. It's a fun time to be in Paso. I'm a volunteer. I'm not an employee. But it's just fun to watch the other employees do their thing and enjoy it and have a good time doing it.
Well, that's good news.
Very good news.
That's good news. Well, last question on taxes. Does it make it harder for you to plan economic development in a rising tax environment? Or is it just, or how do you, or is there a secret to it?
Well, we put together our 5-year economic development strategic plan, which is where you peel the onion down into 5 initiatives and 75 action items. And then we have the strategic plan that Councilmember Bausch has in his hand here. So when you tear it down into bite-sized pieces, it's not necessarily tied to that. There's some things you can do that are more elbow grease oriented, and then some that just require money. And so you just have to see how you can work with what you've got. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, we're saved to the break. We're scrappy here in Paso. If you run into a roadblock, you go over, around, or under it, and that's just how it is.
All right, cool.
Well said.
So let's talk about the strategic work plan. Tell the audience, if they don't know about it, what this is all about, and what the process, just real quickly, what's the process, and then what are the highlights or the lowlights?
I don't think there are any lowlights. Highlights, back in November, City Manager Chris Hewitt brought to us Jacob Green and Associates, our consulting firm, and tried to help us focus on what our goals for city council would be. Why is that important? We're coming up on a new budget cycle. We have to have a new budget in order to align the money, Paul just mentioned, to the goals. We have to first identify what those goals are. There's a limited amount of money. We can't spend money on everything. You have to be strategic. So the 6 goals that were identified: facilities, transportation, and infrastructure. 2, public safety. 3, housing and homelessness. 4, cultural, recreational, and open spaces. Number 5, community and economic development. And number 6, efficient and effective governance. So by using number 6, efficient and effective governance, we can come back and decide how we should spend this money. We've had a couple of workshops now. I have on my calendar, I believe this is the correct date. It might change, but May 6th is the next tentative date to get together and talk about this. And then staff will take back all the input that we have from council and the citizens, and we will come up with a budget. They will come up with a budget and present it back to council. Council will vote on that budget.
And I mean, are you foreseeing having a balanced budget? I mean, I guess you have to have a balanced budget, but I mean, are you going to be, you know, where is the budget going to be, do you think, from a...
I think, Wayne and Paul, if you like, but Paso is in a very enviable spot right now in the amount of balance reserves and enterprise funds that we have. We live within our means. We have some expenses that are very, very typical of most small municipalities. But overall, from a business standpoint, I'm pleased with how our budget, and again, coming back to Ryan Cornell, how he makes sure he and his staff do a great job of keeping us on track and living within our means.
So one of the things that always, and again, we talked about it during the break, so I'll bring it up here now. You know, whenever I see the homelessness
sure
lumped in with affordable housing, that to me is a discrepancy. Homelessness should be a public safety issue and dealt with differently. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Right, I think the way homelessness unhoused is dealt with here in Paso, it is through public safety by and large with our CAT teams. We have 3 CAT teams now that work on a daily basis with the homeless, especially down in the riverbed.
What does CAT stand for again?
The
Community Action
Team.
Oh, okay.
And so we have 2 that have been doing this for about 12 years, and then 2 more recent folks. So I think it's, we don't have the final numbers yet from the point in time count back in January. That's coming hopefully soon in May. The early projection is that we have less homeless now than we had 2 years ago. Going down into the riverbed as part of the point in time count, going down into the riverbed, it is just far cleaner than it was 2 years ago. Hmm. And credit to our homeless service manager, Ashley Hernandez, for getting the resources together and cleaning up the riverbed. We have to decide, you know, there are some in the community that believe that the city should be providing housing. I don't think city provides housing from a public sector, from an unhoused sector, or from a market rate or rental. We have a separate entity, Paso Robles Housing Authority, that takes care of that. To the extent that we can be involved, that's it. Hmm. But we should not be really... The state of California might change that perspective. The state might force us to provide housing.
Mm-hmm.
There's some legislation that may change that.
How are you seeing the state budget cutbacks impacting Paso Robles?
I don't think the state budget impacts us as much as it impacts the county. We're fairly insulated from that. Ryan did a great job not too long ago of updating some of that. Catherine Piatti, his assistant, helps us understand where some of those numbers are. I think if we continue to be careful with as we can project what revenue we're going to get from property tax, sales tax, and whatnot, live within those means, I think we'll be in good shape.
All right. Okay.
I think California is going to be struggling to the extent that California has to cut back on services. and grants that could impact us in the future. So we have to be very careful.
Well, I mean, you know, they're going to get, looks like they're going to get this billionaire tax
on the ballot.
And that, you know, again, that's another problem for California.
Especially if you're Paul.
I know.
It's been nice knowing you. It's time to move on.
Back to Tahiti, huh? Yeah. Back to Tahiti. So in the last few minutes we have left in this segment, Paul, are there any economic development things that we haven't touched on that you'd like to highlight that are going on here in Paso Robles? Initiatives that you want to get done that you know you're starting to work on? I mean, anything I haven't touched on?
No, obviously Spaceport is the shiny object everyone likes to talk about. But here, as you see in the strategic work plan, in the 5-year economic development strategic plan, there's lots and lots of actions that we're working on, mm-hmm. Which includes our project working with Capslo on child care providers, because that frees up workforce,
okay.
Which is something that because we want to support our existing industries, which is wine and tourism. They're going through what they're going through, but we mm-hmm. need to support them. They're very important parts of our economy. We did an economic impact study on tourism, for example. Tourism today literally pays 37% of the city's general fund. 1 out of 5 jobs in the city is supported by tourism. And if we didn't have tourism in Paso Robles, every household would have to pay on average about $1,800 more per year in taxes to have the same level of city services we have today.
So, or we'd have to cut way back.
We
don't want to cut
back. And so that's just literally what's paying the bills. Mm-hmm. And so the idea, and the tourism is based largely on the wine industry. So we do what we can to support them. And when we had focus groups, they talked about, they need obviously rental housing, which we've talked about, but also child care, because that frees up workforce. So that's a big part that we do. And then we get to work on fun things like, and what can we do to help on the city side to make things, to support what you're doing? That's where we get into placemaking and beautification efforts. Downtown lighting, for example. When I first got here, one of the priorities was the park is a big, dark, scary place. And now it's an attraction unto itself. Mm-hmm. Before it was something you ran through between your car and a restaurant. Now it's families come down there in the evenings. It's fantastic. And that's just year-round. And of course, the holidays, it's even more so. I'm working with the new Commission on Arts and Culture, because that's what we can do on downtown beautification. Alley beautification, making us a more walkable downtown. That supports local businesses. Part of what I do is I liaise, as does the council member, with Main Street and Travel Paso and the Chamber and the Wine Alliance, mm-hmm. To see how we can support the private sector. I really enjoy that part of it, is seeing. My job is literally a bridge between the private and the public sector. So there's a lot of really exciting things going on, having the dialogue. Paso is just awesome. There's so many people here that are engaged. And I was just at an event over the weekend, people who just moved here, and immediately jumped in with both hands and both feet. They said this is a great town where you can just get involved very quickly. And everyone wants to see Paso succeed.
What do you, Chris, yeah.
Can I segue off that real quick?
Yeah.
So we have our volunteer opportunities. Coming up, and the applications close this Thursday. Mm-hmm. Need to get your applications in now.
What, applications for what? I'm sorry.
Arts and Culture Board, okay. That we talked about. There's 5 openings for that. Library Board of Trustees. I think there's 2 openings. Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee. Our Senior Citizen Advisory Committee. And our Youth Commission. Can't stress enough, if you've got kids or grandkids out there in high school especially, looking for a good job, especially to help on their college resume, and they do an amazing job of updating stuff to do for our teens. But those are good. Are you going to talk about 4th of July?
No, you can.
Okay. Don't fight over it.
All right. And then if you're looking for something a little more monetary, it's easier to write a check. We need sponsors for our 4th of July celebration. 250th anniversary, the state's going to tag in with their celebration. But if you can help us out with a sponsorship on the 4th of July, Barney Schwartz would be most appreciated.
What's planned or what's hoped to be planned for
that? Right now, we've ordered the fireworks.
All right.
That's about all I can say at the moment. It's an amazing fireworks show.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. All right, well, when we get back, we're going to wrap it up with some questions on the upcoming election. Not going to get too political.
Oh, no.
Not going to get too political. But
the primary, right?
The primary.
Okay.
All right. And anything else you guys want to talk about. So, folks, stand by. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters, our last segment with Paso Robles City Councilman Chris Bosch and Economic Development Director of Paso Robles, Paul Sloan. You still have time to call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I'm bringing back Megan Barth from the California Globe. She's the executive editor. We had some technical issues last week. She couldn't call in, and she's just covering some really great stories between Eric Swalwell and all the fraud, Medicaid fraud that's going on. Gee, I didn't ask you if we're having any of those problems here yet, but that's going to be in a whole other show. And then we're going to have Paul's counterpart down in Atascadero, Lorelei Capel, is going to be joining us. She is the Economic Development Manager at Atascadero. And so we're going to see what Atascadero is up to. I think there's some friendly competition going on between Paso and Atascadero. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, she'll introduce herself as being from Atascamazing.
Ah.
So I always remind her we're our Paso-tastic.
Okay.
And, no, she's awesome. Lorelei is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to having her on.
There's no competition, just to be honest. Paso's got it hands down.
There you go.
the big guy speaks. All right. On all those opportunities to get on boards or make a contribution, how do people find that information out?
I think the best contact name is Wyatt Lund. I'm going to hand his phone number out over the 805-635-1200, 635-1200. Or prcity.com.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you guys wanted to talk about one more thing before I asked you anything else.
Coffee with the City.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Coming up 7:30 Thursday.
Okay.
This Thursday. Great opportunity to meet with your city leaders, city staff. It's held at Calco's Brewery in their patina room.
Okay.
And it's usually packed, so get there early. There's coffee. Sometimes they have donuts if Paul and I aren't there before everybody else. You might have some left. But it's a great opportunity.
What time is that?
7:30 a.m.
In the morning, huh?
In the morning.
You guys get up that early?
Well, we're there.
Okay.
Of course we get up that early.
It's right next to Calco, so it's really convenient.
All right. So, I don't want to talk politics too much here, but Chris, I mean, as we move into the primaries,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you think our listeners should be paying attention to that can make a difference in our lives here in California?
I think people need to be very cognizant of what a dire position California has placed itself. Without getting too political, we have to be really careful of who we send to office, what they're going to vote for. We are not going to be broke. We are broke. And that's a big impact, mostly on our schools.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know why we have a school bond coming up? Is because the school has to shift spending on infrastructure. They have to spend more money on salaries, and that makes it very difficult. So just read, get out, and vote. Don't sit home this time. Get out and vote.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, again, this is a problem. We have low propensity voters.
Yes.
In this state, in this area in particular. And those are the ones that usually call and complain the most.
Get involved. If you're not sure and you think you can do a better job, figure out how to run. If you're not sure how to run, contact one of us. We can help you figure that out.
Yep.
But make sure you vote.
All right. Anything else on your radar that you want to touch bases
I'm
on?
I'm sure there is. I'll think of it as soon as I walk
out the door,
we're,
huh?
We're good. Thank you, Barry.
All
Thanks
right.
for having us.
Well, we got a few more minutes left. So what about you, Paul? I mean, have we... hit all your hot buttons here today?
Some of the highlights, for sure. There's always more to talk about. I just like to let folks know that I'm really easy to get a hold of. So I work in City Hall, so feel free to swing by. Otherwise, shoot me an email at psloan, P-S-L-O-A-N, at prcity.com. And since we're giving out Wyatt's home phone, I'll give out my cell phone. My cell phone is 805-635-5299. And happy to talk, converse by email, and grab a coffee, support our downtown businesses, and talk about ideas, questions, whatever they have.
So you guys, I know you're working closely with the chamber and with the Wine Alliance, but what do you do to Do you do coffees with citizens and just get their input
on
stuff?
Anytime you can just meet together, grab a coffee, do whatever you want. Sometimes you have questions. I'm meeting with someone this week who has a business idea.
Mm-hmm.
I love startups and small, you know, I work with all size businesses. You know, my background is that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, this is my idea. How do I get started? I just love that. And then there's just so much they have to do, you know, and there's a lot to take in. So just brainstorming on how they can get their idea off the ground. So I'm meeting with someone this week that. So anyone that has those kinds of ideas, just I love reaching out and having people talk to me if they have questions about what we're doing at the city. I love talking about those things as well.
Well, it's really heartening to me that we actually, both of you guys are serial entrepreneurs,
sure.
You know, and that you guys are really, you know, you're outside the box as far as what a lot of people who are in public office and or work for the city, a city or a county, you're really, you know, you're looking at it differently than the way it's always been done.
Sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes that's a curse.
Well, it makes you a target, right?
It makes you a target.
Yeah.
So it does. If I can give out my phone number,
sure.
As well, 805-610-0350. 610-0350. Call me anytime.
Thank you both for being here today and taking this much time. I really appreciate it. And folks, I'll see you next week with Megan Barth from the California Globe and Lorelei Capel, Atascadero Economic Development Manager. You have a great week. Thanks so much.